Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt One Plus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All in one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt One Plus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Landscapers is over, but we are just getting started. My name is Grace. Yeah, we cover all HBO. If you think there's a an Olivia Colman show that I'm not ready to talk about, you're wrong. So we are here covering Landscapers, a new miniseries from HBO, four episodes. It's all dropped, and so we are going to dive into it. But I am not alone. I am here with, we'll have to figure out whether she is the garden to my gardener or the garden to whichever one, the garden or the gardener. Sarah Carradine is here with me. Sarah, hi.
Hi, Grace. Hi, everybody. I'm podcasting today from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and I acknowledge this land was never ceded. Sovereignty wasn't ceded. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. And talking about land, we're going to talk about landscapers. I don't know if I'm the gardener. That seems like too much work.
You think you want to be the garden and I'll be the gardener? I always very much appreciate your land acknowledgement. I will acknowledge that I am on the land of many nations. I live in Toronto, so the many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, home to many diverse First Nations and your people. And Toronto's covered by Treaty 13 with the Mississaugas of the Credit. We're talking about landscapers. So you think you're the garden. I'll be the gardener. I'll try to rein in.
Could we? Yes. I might run free, or we might be that peculiar pair of police officers. I'm not sure.
Yeah. To be fair, they both are kind of like, I don't really know what that means. I hate gardening.
So,
that's fine. Landscapers. By the time folks hear this, there will have been a preview pod that will have aired, but there might be some time travel shenanigans to that bit of business, because we're endeavoring on watching an episode and then podcasting about an episode. So to be quite honest, I was very excited about the premise of this show, a crime story based on a true story, as we see in the opening minutes of the episode. It says this is a true story, the true fades away, so this is a story.
That is not just me, that is the soundtrack.
Sort of set as a black comedy. Olivia Colman, David Thewlis, is that how you pronounce his name? I know him as that guy from Harry Potter, a shapeshifter, a wolf in Harry Potter. But yeah, I was very excited by the premise of this show. Had you seen much about it before we endeavored on this journey?
I had indeed. I first heard about it because I was reading about the writer's relationship with Olivia Colman. Spoiler, he's her husband. He's been writing this for a while and wrote it specially for her. Kind of started writing it, I think, just before she got absolutely huge. So I think the property has been kicking around for a while. I mean, the arrest of Susan and Christopher Edwards was in 2014.
Yes.
So the story has been bubbling for 8 years and then for 15 years before that. So it's got a bit of a long tail, I think.
Yeah. I didn't know that it was a true story. So I was kind of intrigued to learn that in the opening montage of the show. And certainly adds a little bit of, like, you know, as we were talking about watching an episode, recording an episode, you know, we might have by happenstance spoil ourselves because it is a true story. So the spoilery nature of it. But, you know, I am sort of intrigued to see where they go, because at the beginning of the episode, they do drop the true in the true story. They say this is a story. So how much they deviate from what they happen, or I think probably more likely where they take liberties with what we, you know, don't necessarily know or are unable to know about what might have happened with this in this incident. I'm intrigued by that.
I was very intrigued by, to this day, they maintain their innocence.
Yes.
That's also on screen when we first see this old building just before the director calls for background action and rain.
Yes. Yeah, they maintain their innocence. And you know, Olivia Colman is, you know, quite, I would say, you know, the darling. I feel like she's had quite the career. I don't know, what would you call it? It's not resurgence, you know. She sort of blossomed, you know, in her mid-40s, which I think is, I mean, she's incredible. I sort of fell in love with her through her playing the Queen actually, The Favorite probably is my first Olivia Colman movie, and then seeing her in The Crown. The Father was really good last year. She's very good in Broadchurch, which I had watched recently. So, you know, as somebody who's sort of, she's sort of this like darling, I feel like, at the moment. She has a very notorious Oscar-winning speech when she won for The Favorite. I think she drops an F-bomb during that speech. To see her playing potentially a murderer will be interesting.
We don't know. Well, we don't know. Stick to the story.
Convicted.
Stick to the story. I first knew her from Peep Show, so from her comedy work, and then from there through Broadchurch. So I've known, she's been on my radar for a really long time. So it's more a surgence than a resurgence. She's just got bigger and bigger, and you just think, is there anything she can't do?
Yeah, really, I don't think so. I don't think there's anything she can't do. She is incredible. No,
she's extraordinary.
So, and then of course, David Thewlis, who is great in his own right. Again, really, like my most famous appearance for him would be Harry Potter, but he's been in lots of stuff for many
years. He has had a huge career in British film and television. My generation first saw him in Naked, which was a Mike Leigh film long ago, and we were just stunned by him. I mean, he didn't come from nowhere, obviously, but that was his first, I suppose you would call it, breakout. If you know the work of Mike Leigh, it's incredibly dark and incredibly gritty and incredibly real and incredibly hopeless. And Naked was just an extraordinary tour de force by both Mike Leigh, the writer-director, and David Thewlis, who we were seeing for the first time. This voice, this face, was unlike anything we'd seen before. And I think he, strangely for someone who's so distinctive, he also can play perhaps not so wide a range, but he can play a variety of things. And the kids might know him as the Shame Wizard from Big Mouth.
Yes, he is in Big Mouth. He was in James and the Giant Peach as well, which is a movie that scared me as a child. He was the Earthworm. He also is the dad in The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, a very good a movie that is heartbreaking, but beautiful and very good. He's phenomenal. So the pair of them, sort of, I kept seeing it here in Canada. We don't have HBO Max. We have Crave, which is has HBO on it. And I kept seeing Landscapers being promoted to me, the picture of the two of them hugging. And I knew very soon I would watch it. And I did watch it. So perhaps we should jump in to the plot of the show. Should we do that?
Absolutely. And if you're listening to us in Australia, you can watch it on Stan.
Cool. Great. And yeah, I think HBO Max in America. So we open on this sort of like scenic view. We do, as we said, we get the text overlay. In 2014, Susan and Christopher Edwards were convicted of murder and sentenced to a minimum of 25 years in prison. To this day, they maintain their innocence. And then this is a true story, the true fading away. Yeah, and we hear this director shouting instructions, action, rain, stage left, the trolley sort of moves along. And we see Susan running in the rain. She's on the phone chatting to her lawyer. She's sort of rambling on very adorably. So she's not running in the rain. Sorry, the lawyer's running in the rain. She is in jail, presumably. She's sort of rambling on. She's very like adorable in this moment, I think, like right off the bat. And he keeps trying to interrupt her to basically say like, well, I am not actually your lawyer yet. I'm not officially representing you until we get there and we like sign some papers and go through all the rights. And so they hang up the phone and she's very polite to the police officer who sent her back to her cell.
Sorry to keep you, she says.
Yeah,
hoists
sorry.
A smile.
She's so cute. She's so cute. Yeah, which I worry about.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, at some points I say, you know, get yourself a person who looks at you the way Susan looks at David Thewlis's Christopher with this sort of adoration but slight vacancy that starts to get a bit worrying. Jump in now and say one of the things I particularly like about Landscapers episode one, which is all we've watched, is the world that's created visually. So yes. Even though it's 2014, she dresses like my mother in the 1970s.
Yeah,
which is not saying that the designers got the wrong period. It's just saying that they're using the characters on how would the characters dress. And one thing that's annoying about some period films and TV shows is everybody is au courant in the height of fashion of that particular period, which of course is not the case at all. It's a little cliched but not untrue to say perhaps middle-aged women might dress as they had done 15 years ago in their prime. Also, people don't necessarily have new clothes all the time. And as we discover when we meet Susan and Christopher in France, they are short of a euro. So I don't know how much new clothes shopping there has been. But it's not just them. There's a feeling of dowdiness, a feeling of this London, this place, this England is also 15 years behind. Which is interesting, I think, and visually very, very draws you into a particular world.
The motif here of the director, directing, shouting commands and instructions, you know, that is the first thing we see. We'll see throughout this episode that artistically they make some choices that are, they make some choices that are, I think, you know, they put you into the world of a movie, right? Like the way that Chris and Susan are talking to each other and embracing each other is as if they are in a movie. And I think that this, you know, the beginning, I think Susan sort of yearns for what her life could be like and sometimes is imagining what her life could be like if they were a little better off. Actually, I think she has optimism that perhaps they still will be, as we'll see in some of these scenes, that their life, they're just in a sticky situation at the moment. So I think that all of that is really well done. I don't know how much you read into or had known before the story of these folks, but the Hollywood motif of it all will certainly not be something that we're going to lose along the way. That, I think, will continue to track their sort of obsession, at least Susan's obsession with Hollywood and old Hollywood in particular.
Yes, very much old Hollywood. Yes, the director calling for background action and rain and so on is, I think, the only instance of that in this episode. So I'll be intrigued to see if this sort of director returns or whether that was just a starting point for them.
Yeah, so we cut to Susan is not in prison. She is actually entering kind of a memorabilia shop in France. The clerk, who seems to definitely know her, mentions that he has something that she might want, and it is an original movie poster from featuring Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly. They sort of haggle on the price, and although she gets the price down to just over $100, she ends up having to spend a little bit more because she puts the money, the purchase, on a credit card.
One of an array of credit cards that come out of her wallet.
Yes.
And each one has a little sticky note on it. So she sorts through whether that's a balance thing or whether that's that she selects the correct one and she gives it to Francois.
Yes, Francois.
Who knows a mark when he sees one, I think.
I agree. Yes, I think this is not an unusual endeavor for Susan to be hanging out in this particular shop, perhaps making a purchase or two. Chris gets home. He gets the mail. Susan greets him at the door. It's very loving. They're actually very cute together. The episode doesn't, they tell you that these are people who were convicted of murder, but I almost kind of like immediately forgot that in both. I watched this episode twice and you're like, oh, what a lovely little like home life. And they're struggling, they don't have any money. As she greets him at the door, she's made sandwiches. Christopher says he made a good impression at a job interview and he has another one in the afternoon. So yes. Chris is on the job hunt.
Yes. The sandwich is tuna and sweet corn.
Yeah.
On normal bread. She found some normal bread.
In the English section of the supermarket.
In the British section.
Unfortunately, the mood kind of dampens when Chris sees the movie poster, the box, the cardboard box. Presumably, like, this is one of those, like, I know exactly what you bought. She shows him. It's the same one I had on my wall as a child. And they sort of argue about the price. Susan lies about it's only 20 euros, Chris.
Yeah. She put 170 euros on a credit card, but she says it was 20. It was just 20.
Yeah. He seems to be the one who's paying the bills. He worries every little amount we spend means we can't pay the bills. He has a letter from Gerard. From Gerard, she says.
Ooh la la.
And inside there's 100 euros. And he says, yeah. She says it's a start. And he's a little frustrated because 100 euros might not go a long way for the two of them. So they're not in great financial straits here.
No, and this apartment is just brilliant. The squeaking floorboards, the angles that are not quite right.
The trim is not on all the doorways. Like it's only like the left and the top, the right, it's gone. It's good. It's it puts you in an environment for sure.
It certainly does.
Again, so Susan goes to put the movie poster in the closet. There are the closet is filled with mostly like pictures of cowboys and cowboy figurines. Again, like this like old Hollywood, but the Western sort of Hollywood motif. We get this again, an interesting artistic choice here where she hears a gunshot and she sort of looks over. The screen sort of like is like has a red hue to it. Like it's sort of like a filter. And we see what to me, correct me, both times I watch this, I assume that is Christopher with a cowboy hat and a gun who shoots off his gun and then scurries off into the woods. So
he's going to come and protect her like Gary Cooper in High Noon.
Yeah.
Which we will see both at her watching it and references to it as the episode goes on.
Yeah. Christopher finds her in the closet and tells her she should hang up the poster instead of hiding it away. She agrees. And she says, who wouldn't want to hire a man with such a handsome face? And they kiss.
Yeah.
They're very cute together. They have good chemistry.
She loves him. And his entire job is to look after her.
He's her protector. Yeah.
Mm. He can't let her down.
That's right. But Christopher goes to a job interview, and this might be one of my favorite scenes in the whole episode
of
the TV
good.
Show. Because
so good.
We were talking, I was recently talking about the movie Licorice Pizza with my Post-Show Recaps Theater co-host Ariel. And we were talking about how Paul Thomas Anderson, he likes to let the shot linger. He likes to let the moment sort of happen. And it doesn't need to hold your hand as it's happening. And I just thought this moment of, when he gets called it, it's Christopher, and he speaks a little bit of French. And he compliments it. He's like, good luck, everybody, like in French. And he's so confident. And he sits down and she goes on this huge, long speech, like question, and he just has to say, like, in French, I'm sorry, can you please repeat the question?
Yes, in hesitant French.
In his French, which I was like, because, you know, I'm Canadian, I don't have great French, so I would feel very similar to Christopher in this moment, and I just thought the uncomfortableness of it working and really putting him, you know, letting us, you know, into his world where it's going to be really tough for him to find a job. Yes. They're not getting out of this dilemma that they're in, this financial situation, quickly.
The casting of the extras who are waiting also to be seen. So he is a gray middle-aged man in a dowdy suit sitting with very smart young people, a young woman with a shaved head, groovy young men, brightness and an edge to all of them. And the fact that when he's called, he turns back and says, you know, well, good luck, everybody.
Good luck. But it's so, I don't know, it's the confidence that he has in that moment, and then for it to immediately fade away, I think is very good. Did you notice, so when they sort of, the camera pans and the woman with the bald head stares right at the camera, and we get this, I think, at least one other time in this episode where people seem to be staring directly into the camera, sort of, and like extras, not, there are some moments where like a prominent person. So I think like Christopher is standing one point, he's like staring at the camera. The police officer, the head detective, is sort of staring right at the camera. But there's these like moments that are much more sort of where like it's an extra staring at the camera, which to me is sort of like, to me, my thought process there is like, there, you know, it's sort of like the Jim Halpert look in the camera, like, we know, like, that's awkward, you know, I know that's awkward, sort of like the way that they're, I don't know, did you take anything away from these like extra camera stares?
I liked it. I liked this one in particular because she's so extraordinary looking and so fits in with the environment and the panel of three very young women who are going to interview Christoph. And she looks at us, less Jim Halpert and more the unsayable character from House of Cards.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. More, that makes sense.
It's sort of a more, it's darker, I think. It's inviting us to understand her scorn and the fact that nothing good will come. I found it quite chilling, particularly the second time I watched it. I was quite chilled because you almost don't notice that she's looking at you, and then she's looking at you and it's like, oh, she's looking at you.
There's another woman as she stares at the camera, and that one felt less direct to me because it feels like she's also might just be watching the house as it's getting sort of like the caution tape is being put around the house. Like, it feels like she could just be looking on the other side, but it also does feel like in some ways that extra is looking right at the camera. In sort of that same, I think you're right, it's like it is more chilling than a Jim Halpert like shrug of the shoulders. But there is something just, I don't know, it's again, I just think they made interesting choices that do work for me. It's compelling TV. So yeah.
Yes. And HBO. they do subtitles for all the French that we hear, except this fast. And my French is, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I got one word in 10 if I was lucky.
Yeah.
And he is completely lost. Yeah. So not only it's not only the language barrier. He does talk later about there being a language barrier, but it's also that you do not fit in this world. You just don't.
Yeah, I think that the contradiction here between Christopher being stuck in this world and not fitting in with Susan feeling like this is, you know, this is her, like, she's basically in Paris, you know, she's like a Hollywood star, you know, I think the contradiction between the two of them living their lives is really interesting. So back at the apartment, Susan hangs up the movie poster. Christopher is heading back, but he decides to read the letter. And in a, you know, it's we sort of get Susan's voiceover indicating that Susan has absolutely written this letter. But this is a letter supposedly written by Gerard Depardieu. Just casual correspondence from Gerard Depardieu to Christopher.
Yeah. I wanted it to be from Gerard. I wanted it to be from Gerard as much as Susan does. And in fact, if it hadn't been for the €100 note, I might have been more, might be a letter to a fan, because he talks about his movie La Vie en Rose and how life must be beautiful. But of course, cleverly, the voiceover of the letter is Susan. So perhaps
as she's sniffing the flowers, as she's you know, looking at cake, as she's, you know, at a cafe. It's wonderful. It's really good. Yeah.
She's in a cafe in Lille. It's not Paris, but it's something. She has her version of a beret, which is crocheted. She looks so English in the middle of this Frenchness.
Yes.
We understand that she feels that she's in this world, at the same time looking at her from the outside and seeing that she isn't in this world. But it's Christopher that understands that and her not. And I think, like, I have a lot of thoughts about how much our director, Will Sharp, is doing. Spoiler, too much. Mm-hmm. But there are moments that I just think are so brilliant. And one of them is her reading about life being beautiful and love being beautiful as Gerard Depardieu to the love of her life while she sniffs flowers and gets her cake and gets
He's fairly miserable.
He is fairly miserable.
So let me ask you this, because they don't touch on this in the episode. How much do you think Christopher knows this isn't Gerard Depardieu? Is Christopher, so there's, I think, a few ways. Somehow this guy thinks me and Gerard Depardieu, we are pen pals. There is the argument where he knows and doesn't want to sort of break the illusion that Susan thinks she's keeping, you know? And so he's not telling her, or he just doesn't care. I don't know. I feel like he knows, but he's the protector, right? And if you tell Susan that you know, then she's sad. So just don't tell her that you know.
Yes. I think it's that middle one. I think he knows it's her. One of the little clues we get is she says, oh, read it. It's for you. Because he invites her to open the envelope. No, it's for you. Yeah. And she says, she very excitedly asks him to read it over the tuna and sweet corn sandwich. And he says, I'll look at it later. I think we didn't know it was Gerard Depardieu at the time, but once he sits and looks at
it's from Gerard. I think it on the rewatch was very funny to me.
It's from Gerard.
They're on a first name basis. It's from Gerard.
It's one of the kindnesses that he does her, or that the argument could be that it's not a kindness to indulge her in this fantasy, which is, I mean, we don't know the beginning. And I have to say, because I knew when the hype started for Landscapers, I thought, well, I am going to watch it, and I want to watch it without any side googing. By the time you hear us talking about this, we may have already done a preview episode where we have side googed. One thing I do feel is very confident that they will take me somewhere, whatever my thoughts about some overdoneness or in other, or the music, which I feel very confident that I will be taken on a journey of sorts and then have thoughts along the way, and I'll do the side googing afterwards.
I'm intrigued. I think in this moment, in this scene where she has written the letter to him and he's reading the letter, there is some stuff later where we do get sort of a view into what the relationship between Susan and her mother might have been like. It's all very hazy. It's again under that like red filter, so it's not super clear. It does seem like in that moment Patricia is Susan's mother is not being exactly kind to Susan. Although how much of this show is, you know, I think that the action of it all from the director at the beginning of the show, it feels like, you know, it's a guy who says that, but in many ways, I do wonder how much of this, you know, and they maintain their innocence. Is this a story that we are supposed to be viewing from Susan and Christopher's perspective in many ways? Of this is what this is the story version of what happened. And for many reasons, that's why it will look more in their favor than perhaps the real story. I don't know the real story. I don't know. I know that they are convicted, but I don't know, you know, everything about it and sort of like where, you know, people have weighed in afterwards to say, well, there is some doubt, you know, I don't know any of that. And so, but I feel like what this story is going to try and tell us is this is from Susan and Christopher's point of view, that this is their imagining of them being on set, being in a Hollywood movie and somebody directing them. And this is the story and it's their story. They are the heroes of this story. So it will look much perhaps nicer than it does for anybody else. And I do wonder in the imagining of that, who is actually protecting who? Is Susan protecting Christopher? She's writing these letters to him, right? Pretending to be Gerard Depardieu. Or does she even think, like, does she think she's his protector? Although she does say, you are supposed to protect me later in the episode. And Christopher obviously sees himself as Susan's protector. So I think all interesting stuff. I can see why they decided to make this miniseries based on this story, even if they've taken some liberties. Christopher heads to a telephone booth.
This was absolutely stunning. It's
the tension. The tension of the scene is really good for one actor, you know, with somebody on the other line. But I thought it was really strong.
Mm-hmm. The phone booth is in the middle of a sort of light industrial area. At some point when he's on the phone in the booth, a big bus swings past him. It's gray. It's an absolutely brilliant visual of a man trapped, and David Thewlis performs it brilliantly. The light tone of the conversation as he quietly bangs his head on the glass, as he squishes up his face, it's an extraordinary performance. And as you say, it's one actor with a piece of equipment. So. Yeah.
It's really good, and you can just feel the tension in his on him, on his face, in his voice as he says it. And yeah, the slow unraveling. And again, you get this protector theme where he's saying, I need you not to tell the police. I need you not to tell anybody because, you know, Susan's fragile. I have to protect her. And of course, you know, it's not all what it seems, not at all. But yeah, he does say that he made a bad decision. He tells her where they are, that they're in France and they have a cash flow situation and asking for help. And I think to try and do that, he tells sort of spills the beans on what he had done 15 years ago.
This is to Tabitha, his stepmother. Yes. He hasn't been in touch for a while. We learn through the conversation that she has helped them financially before. I wonder so much about, I mean, he says later that he had to tell her in order to get the loan, but I wonder if this is him protecting Susan by putting into action the eventual arrest, whether consciously or otherwise. He certainly says, please, you mustn't tell the police, you mustn't tell the police. But I wonder if there's a part of him that just knows after the humiliation of the job interviews, we learn later they've all been terrible. He's been telling her that they've been going well. And he knows that something has to change. And I wonder if there's an element of telling his stepmother about the dead bodies, we don't know who murdered who, was partly a conscious or otherwise decision on his part to get it moving. This must happen. Let it happen.
I think that's a good point. I think him sort of doing it subconsciously, I think is interesting because there's so much as the rest of this episode unfolds itself that he is the one sort of pushing that they do go. They just go back and try to explain themselves. I think he generally feels confident that they could somehow talk themselves out of whatever possible trouble they would be in from what happened, that they, you know, I don't know. I was at the end of this episode, they're walking and just tell them the story and just tell the truth. She says, yeah, just tell the truth. And again, like, is the lens of this, that they're, you know, on a movie set and that they did, you know, in this version of the story, they didn't do anything wrong, right? That they really did. But in this, you know, with them as the heroes of this story, they didn't do anything wrong. The parents perhaps are abusive, as sort of is alluded to. later in the episode. So the idea that he tells her, because it's so strange to tell her, right? I think the sort of phony reason is, you know, that he has to explain somehow why they would have gone to France, but you could just go to France. You could just want to live in France. So he does feel like he has to give some information to be able to like get something back. A pretty big piece of information to get to give 15 years after you've committed a crime.
The young police officer later will say he was answering questions nobody was asking.
Yeah, I think that does really, yeah, it is interesting. Christopher meets Susan at the cafe. He tells her that the interview went good when she asked. But Christopher says that even if he gets the job, he probably won't be paid for a few weeks and they could still be in trouble. He wants to borrow some money and thinks that they should ask Tabitha, which Susan does not like asking Tabitha for money. This is not, no way.
No. We see the steel in Susan for the first time. Her mouth gets very small.
Yes.
She still has the slight smile and it's just, no.
It's very firm. It's a firm
bites
no.
Down on no,
I was chatting with some people the other day about firm no's, a skill that I very much had to hone as a camp director. Because when people ask, when you just say, well, maybe, then they're just going to ask you again later. So Olivia Colman, Susan Edwards, very good at the firm no. Chris, she says they're just in a bit of a sticky situation. They're in a sticky patch. And Chris agrees. And so they drop it. And she won't tell anyway.
No. But, no, she won't tell.
Tabitha calls the police. She tells
Tabitha,
the police
to, cigarette in hand.
She's great.
Calls the police.
I very much like Tabitha. She tells the police that Chris said he buried his wife's parents in their garden 15 years ago. Emma, a detective, tells her boss about the report. I really like the dynamics of the detectives because this is a show that could so easily just have these characters could be so two-dimensional that you know, that's just who they could be, right? They're like, oh, there's a crime. Okay, we get to, there's a crime. We're going to go to the house, you know, but the little things they do to make these characters, one of them very much unlikable and the other two very interesting, I think. It's funny. So like he keeps telling her to F off and she says, please stop telling me to F off. He goes to drink.
They
from
use
his,
the whole word.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. He drinks from this thermos. He goes, why is it so hot? She goes, well, it's a flask. Like I just think this scene is really fun. And there's no need for it to be as fun as it is, I think, on this, like, you know, they're not the central people in this story, you know?
The police in this episode are the buffoons. They are the light comedy.
Yeah.
Tonally, in the end, I think it doesn't quite fit for me. Yeah, I can see what they were trying to do. And I think particularly the DCI, they call him the DCI, that's Detective Chief Inspector, for those who don't know the ranks of the British police. It's a little bit overacted, whereas the buffoonery of the two younger junior officers and their ridiculousness, eating a sausage while sitting on a chair with your toes on the floor, is much more earned, I think. Slightly, dare I say, better acted. I don't want to do down the actor that plays the DCI. I'm sure he was directed to do it like that.
I do agree with you. The flash moment to me is very, I thought that was very funny. And there's, I think, the drive over when he is repeating his own joke. Like he's such the butt of the joke, right? We are laughing at him and not with him. I think those work. His just general angriness, I don't think works for, it's so like, I don't know. It's not as good, I don't think. So I'm with
you. Yes, I am with you. Those moments where it should be a burst of anger out of a sort of a generally just tight person, but it's a little bit one note for me. Whereas the junior officers had a little more, they have an intriguing relationship. Yes, I liked them being slightly the buffoons, but also they are going to arrest our hero and heroine. So, you know, there's some darkness there too.
I like this too. The back and forth of this, I think some of the cuts from one scene to another are pretty strong. The chief detective there, he says, well, do they know, like, you know, the Edwards know? And Emma says, well, yeah, apparently Tabitha sent Christopher an email. He sent her an email.
They don't have a telephone.
It's true. Well, you have time. I guess I was gonna say you have time to send an email. I prefer you listen to the ad break, but we are going to take a quick break. We are going to send it over to our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All in one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Okay, we are back. Not going well in the Edwards household.
There's very violent chopping. Susan is chopping a carrot in such a violent fashion, which I think is both brilliant for the marital discord, but also to see that there is that in her.
Yes. He's read the email from Tabitha. I think the smugness of Christopher about the email is very, when he's like, and personally, I'm rather upset at her for being told the police about the bodies that were in the garden.
I'm on your side.
Yeah. He says that he had to call Tabitha or they'd be eating croissants out of the rubbish bin. They'd be on the streets. And she said, well, at least we'd be together. Sure, I need a croissant out of a rubbish bin for you. I personally love croissants, so even one out of a rubbish bin, I think, you know.
What about an eclair with a bite out of it?
George Costanza is calling.
Yes. I would eat a croissant out of a rubbish bin. I mean, there are the freegans around that were around for a while who would haunt food courts and swoop on half-finished meals, which I think. I like it. I applaud it. I worked at a swimming pool once with a girl who would dumpster dive out the back of two major supermarkets and get, you know, packaged goods, absolutely nothing wrong with them. And that's how she ate. So I would eat or at least we'd be together, Grace. That's the thing. That's the thing. We'd be together.
Eating croissants out of the rubbish bin. We throw a lot away. We throw a lot of food away in our capitalist society. Expiration dates that are phony and faulty and pretty much made up. So yeah, there's no shame in anyway, Susan says it's fine. We just have to move again. And she goes to start packing. The way she tenderly puts her hand on his face. We just have to move again. It's fine. But that does not, she's not as actually okay with that. She does smash a picture. I'm assuming of the guy from the movie poster, but I don't actually know.
Gary Cooper. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Black and white.
Yeah. When Chris goes to check in, she yells at him for not protecting her. So he says they both knew this day would come, but she says, you don't get to make that decision by yourself. We are in this together. He calms her down by suggesting they watch a film together. Seems like this trick has worked a lot. Well, let's just watch a film.
I think this is a go-to.
We'll watch a movie.
So her face softens. She goes somewhere else. Yeah, she'd like that. I'd like that, she says.
Yeah. The detectives show up to the house in Britain. And this is what I'm saying. There are these like choices that they make where like somebody writing a TV show is just going to say the cops show up to the house. But there's this like choice that they make to show up at a house. And then he's like, yeah, we're looking for number five. He's like, that's not number five. That's number seven. And the camera pans over to look at a house that's like identical. And then they're like, are you going to move up? It's like, yeah, okay, I'll move up. And they drive the car forward. And it's just like little character beats that add, I think, to the show and to these two characters that in a poorer script would just say two cops drive, pull up to the house. Right. I don't know. It works for me.
Yes, I like this very much. The quick pan to the identical pair of houses.
It's quirky.
With our junior officers, who I'm very fond of, they're a great pair. There's obviously some tension or something in their relationship, which I find intriguing. I'm looking forward to either finding out or not finding out, which would also be another choice. She tells him not to be an idiot when they knock on the door. She rings the bell and then he knocks and he...
Yeah, why'd you knock?
But why'd you knock? I rang the bell, which many a woman recognizes.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, yes. This is DC Emma and DC Paul, or Wilkie, as he's often referred to. He gets the last name treatment. She's Emma, I noticed as well. Yeah, they knock on the door. The homeowner lets them in, says he has a child sleeping upstairs. So they should head out to the back garden. And then we get this other quirky character of the neighbor. Nigel, I believe, is the name of the neighbor. He says, do you want to talk through the gap? And so they move down the hedge and chat through the gap. He says, see, this is much easier when there's a gap in the hedge. He says that the Witcherleys, who were the elderly couple who lived there before, traveled a lot as of about 15 years ago, were mostly, were not there anymore. They decided to travel and leave and left the house to their daughter and son-in-law. And there's this thing that the show does as well, which is he says, he talks about how the Witcherleys, the wife always walked a few paces behind the husband. He says, I don't know if that would be a clue. And later at the end when he says, oh yeah, there was this one morning where I did see Christopher like digging a big hole in the garden. You know, and I kind of just joked, oh, it's probably burying his in-laws because they had just recently left. And then he says, so yeah, I don't know if that's a clue. It cuts to like the house.
Smash cut the house thing.
Caution tape.
The backhoe coming in, caution tape, police, the homeowner and his children being ushered out. It was wonderful.
It's just quirky and I really like it.
Through that scene, DC Paul's eating a sausage sandwich with homemade ketchup and really loving it while Emma's sausage sandwich sits firmly on the plate untouched.
She's actually interviewing the man. So the police reach out to Christopher having found these two bodies in the garden. Susan watches a movie. What did you think of the sort of cinematography? Again, this is like an artistic choice where like she's sort of the image of the movie is reflecting back on her as she sits in bed, almost again like she's in the movie. She's in that world as it's happening, while in the other room Christopher's on the computer.
I think I'll show my hand now and say that I find every effect, flashback, young girl's feet running, film reflecting on, I absolutely buy it and love it when it's Susan.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's other characters, for me it's muddy and extra, even when it's Christopher, because I feel that so much, I mean... Olivia Colman could do it without any of these effects is one of the other points, right?
Yes. I'd watch the Olivia Colman one-woman show on the stage.
The one-woman show of landscapers. So there is part of me that thought, well, you have Olivia Colman and David Thewlis. You actually don't need all this other stuff. Like we say, cast it well and then stand back. However, I didn't mind the externalization of her slight fantasy world, even in the idea of her looking at flowers in her crocheted beret as she goes to the outdoor cafe. We fully understand this world that she inhabits. When it's other people, and particularly as we're going to come to now, emails between the DCI and Christopher Edwards, where the person writing the email is standing in front of the person reading the email, I felt that this is, I thought, but that's another, like, I liked it as an effect, but I felt like it was from a different show. It was each thing that this director, Will Sharpe, is fantastic. He's a young 35-year-old. He's quite interesting. He's had a few, he's been a writer in television, and he's had a few credits. So I think this is his, you know, the BBC was putting a lot of faith in him. And I think he has an incredible visual eye. He got wonderful performances out of all the actors, the DCI accepted for me. Mm-hmm. But it feels like he's using everything. And each thing is good. Each effect is good. Each strangeness is good. But taken together, look, there's three more episodes to go, so I will mm-hmm. I will reserve my judgment. But I felt very much effective when it was Susan's world, when it goes into black and white, when it's David and Susan embracing very operatically, head to chest, facing out. I loved all that. When she's packing, as will happen, sorry, I'm jumping ahead, but the apartment is almost a little cutout floating in black. I loved that because that's how she feels. She feels she's floating in this little world. And even in the end credits where you see the crew taking down the set that was the Lille apartment mm-hmm. of the Edwards, when it's her, for me, it's incredibly effective. When it's Christopher, it's less effective. And then when it's the DCI, you know, giving a press conference and seeing, or not even seeing, but David's there in the crowd reading back his email, to me, not so effective. But I will reserve my judgment slightly.
No, I'm definitely with you. I think that he's making some artistic choices. I think, you know, I agree with the line that you're drawing. And to me, I think where it could be a little bit cleaner is if anytime they use that stuff, it's from Susan's point of view. How does Susan envision her world? She envisions herself in this movie. It's this interesting thing where I actually do think, like, oh, that actually makes sense, that like the gunshot of like him being a cowboy is like him pressing send on an email, right? Like, it works, except that Susan doesn't know that he's doing that. I guess that's not true. I guess if you think of this whole thing as her movie, then I guess she does, right? If she's writing this movie, like, she does know that he does send the email and he's doing it to protect her so he can be the cowboy in that situation. So there is like pieces that work. And then I was wondering whether, because the red filter is there when she imagines Christopher being a cowboy who shoots, and then it's also there when she's remembering her mom being abusive, right? Or yelling, at least in some way, being mean to her is maybe, you know. And so on one hand, I'm like, those are two different ideas. And in many ways, then I think, no, that actually works because it's all in Susan's. That is all in Susan's head. The idea that Chris is a cowboy who protects her and that her mom was potentially mean, we don't know. So that's all from Susan's lens. So the red filter, like, it works. But then there's also this weird thing where, like, if this is Susan's reality, like, I think that her being the reflection of the movie that she's watching sitting in bed works so much for me, better than like a red filter. The red mm-hmm. filter feels a little distant, where the shadow of the movie feels like she's in the middle of the movie. So I'm mostly liking it, and then feeling like if I think too hard, I might not like it as much. But then sometimes I'm like, oh, I totally flipped her again. I'm like, now I'm in it again. So
yes,
he's doing interesting stuff. Yeah. I think it's worth throwing it at the wall. And in the middle of it, we get these, you know, David Thewlis and Olivia Colman with these.
Yes, exactly. So, the reflection all around the bedroom as she sits up on the squeaky brass bed while he's writing, and she has the movie reflected on her, and her face is just enraptured as he torturously writes and hesitates to send and finally sends with a gunshot. the email, I just thought that was perfection. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I'm now going to be harder on things that I go, actually, I really like the character Christopher Edwards standing in front of the DCI saying the email, but that's a different product. That was a different way to go with the.
Well, there's the production. One where the guy, when he writes, the DCI writes the email, he repeats it by standing like in front of the house, right? He's like standing in front of the house and he said, and yeah, to me, that doesn't work. And like they do the same thing with him later where he's responding to the email in the police station. And to me, like that again, doesn't like, I don't get the choice. Those two choices I don't get. At all. The like cowboy gunshot on the enter. Yeah, you got it. Her being enraptured in the movie. I got it. Him being a cow, him like seeing himself as the cowboy.
Yes.
Seeing as a cowboy. I like all. That's the next scene basically. Well, we do get the police officers. They're chatting. This is where the gardener in the garden scene comes up. They're having a meal after the DCI said that there's not enough evidence to basically like internationally extradite the Edwards back.
This was a very, very skillful piece of exposition, I felt, where the DCI is explaining to the eager Emma why they can't just go and get them. And there's a little bit of character there where he says, well, referring to Paul, well, he's an idiot and he understands it. So I thought it was very good, this quick idea of why they could, because we're all thinking that too. Oh, you're going to go and arrest them. When did they die? How did they die? Who put them there? How long have they been there? Where were the Edwards at the time? There's no evidence of any kind. They have the bodies, but that's it. And he makes the statement, they could, croc madame and her Muppet husband can stay on their French holiday forever, which was interesting, makes Christopher's actions, I think, even more portentous, that he has decided that the time has come. Yeah. In some way, consciously or otherwise, the time has come. Because you know, they could have been eating croissants out of rubbish bins for the rest of their lives in France, and the British police couldn't have touched them.
Yeah. So Chris wakes up. He has another job interview, but he's sick of going to job interviews. The last one was a waste of time and humiliating, and we learn that the police have not responded to Chris's email. They are silence as of now. Yeah, so Chris goes in the bathroom. He sees himself in the mirror as the cowboy in the movie.
But with the green filter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he sees himself in the mirror and he has this strange look on his face as if, is he seeing himself as a cowboy? Is he startled? I liked that scene very much. So first of all, I thought, oh, no, it's Christopher and not Susan. But then I thought he's being drawn. He feels drawn in towards her fantasies, which I think is part of the reason that he steels himself then to, no, we must return to England. This is the right decision. I'm glad it's happened, as he says on the train later. Yeah. But I liked this very ambiguous look that he had on his face, looking into the bathroom mirror, having to actually put his glasses on to really see, am I seeing what I'm seeing? And it's himself as a cowboy, which is, you know, Susan's fantasy and it must be said, his fantasy of himself as her protector, fantasy and reality. I can't let Susan down, he says to Tabitha on the phone. And it's some actors, or when you're writing a character, you sometimes find a line. They may or may not say it, but it's a line that really keys into the character's motivations, overall motivations. And I think for him, I cannot let Susan down is his. So yeah.
She's fragile too, is what he says, which I think is interesting because I didn't say it at the beginning, but that opening scene where Susan is on the phone, she is trying to tell the lawyer that, you know, she's here, that's fine, but my husband doesn't belong here. He doesn't belong in prison. He didn't do anything wrong. And so we shift from the mirror scene to the two of them sitting down for dinner, and instantly Susan starts crying. And she tells Christopher that she blames herself. This is her fault. She has messed up his life. And we get this very sweet embrace where he says, no, you are my life. You're my whole life. You know that. And then the camera changes to this, to me, is like very old Hollywood. It's really good. Sort of like looking down on Susan as she looks like an old movie star, and like the, you know, the look in her eyes, she's looking at Christopher, he's telling her that it's okay, they'll be okay, and then they hug and embrace. You could see it, like the shot through the window, like the, it's all black and white. It's really good. It's
well gorgeous done. And as she looks up at him, because it's quite a height differential,
yep,
between the two actors, she looks up at him with the unshed tears,
yeah,
in her eyes, and it's gorgeous.
It's really good. It's really good. So they are deciding to go back to England. They're packing up their belongings. We do see the imagery of the girl running on the stone, sort of on the dirt stone path here, which we'll see a few times towards the end of this episode. That I'm wondering what that is. You know, that feels a bit of a mystery. I mean, it obviously seems like it's Susan as a kid, and perhaps if she ran away as a kid, like she maybe tried to do and had to go back. This is my best guess, that they wouldn't have ended up doing what they end up deciding to do, is how I envision that. But I'm intrigued to see what that means. I hope it means something, but yeah.
I hope it means something, and is not, because I must say when it happened, I thought, oh, now we've got an extra thing, yet uh-huh. another thing, which is this flashback. But I did like it when they're on the train and she's drowsing and she's thinking about this sort of this fleeing, this escaping. And I think that there's a theme there, like well before the move to France 15 years ago, and we'll have to move again, as she says. I think there's a sort of a fleeing and a running theme in Susan's life, if what we believe to be true is true. Yep. So yep. I didn't like it here. But then when it reappeared, when she is drowsing, leaning on the window of the train as the Eurostar, I liked it. And my hope with these slight, I'm not going to call them criticisms from me because I haven't seen the whole show.
You can nitpick but if, for now.
Yeah, it's a little nitpick for now. And then when it pays off in episode 3, I promise to put my hand up and say so.
They also find a picture of what we presume to be her parents, and they burn that along with potentially some other stuff in a trash bin outside. So Christopher does send the email to the police. He says, "We will return to England. They prefer to turn themselves in rather than facing a potential surprise arrest." But they do ask the police to buy their tickets.
Brilliant.
It's good.
I hope that's true, because day tickets on the Eurostar are very expensive and mm-hmm. they're a little short tickets at the moment. Yeah. So could the police please arrange? And we have a very calm, this is beautiful work, mm-hmm. wonderful editing, wonderful directing, as we follow Susan and Christopher calmly walking towards the train. She stops for a moment. He reassures her. They move on. They're on the train. It's very calm. She says, "Oh, I'm quite glad now." They're drowsing. They have a cup of tea. It's all this wonderful, almost lyrical.
A celebrity sighting potentially on the train.
Sighting on the train.
Susan thinks she saw Gerard Depardieu
coming out of business class.
I think I saw Gerard. Was it Gerard? She goes, "No, it was just a lookalike. But I thought I saw him."
Yeah. And meanwhile, the absolute agitation of the police, they've got to get from Nottinghamshire up to London. They've got to be at St. Pancras Station to meet the Eurostar. There's much shouting and running and get me London and get me the transport police and get me this yeah. and get me that and get out of the front seat.
Let me in the back.
She's trying to get into the back seat. The car's got a child lock on it. There's this wonderful juxtaposition of the energy of the police and this kind of calm, fatal walking towards their destiny of the Edwards. I thought it was brilliant.
Listen, I don't relate to head DC. I think it's Collier. I don't know what his name is, but the DCI. But him doing his bit about Scotch eggs and then Emma not like really know it, like kind of annoyed by it, and so he decides to repeat it thinking she might not just have heard it. Very relatable as somebody who likes to do bits on my But it also worked for me from yeah, Emma, I bet this happens a lot where people, oh, you probably just didn't understand my joke, Emma. You probably just didn't get it. So I'm going to repeat. You've never seen Scotch eggs that long.
Yeah, anyway. I'd like to see the chicken that laid that egg. Sorry, Emma, did you say something? What? She's in the back seat.
Yeah, did you say something?
No, did you say something? No.
I was just talking about the Scotch eggs.
And then he says, hello, is this thing on? But in a very disgusted fashion. And you can see that Paul, the other police officer, the junior officer, laughs at the joke. I think he knows how to, you know, what his path is going to be for this career.
Yeah.
And Emma, who I think she's encapsulated in a line that she has when she and Paul are talking after the disappointment of not being able to arrest the Edwards. And she talks with disgust about Christopher referring to Susan as fragile. Because it's apropos, she is a very petite woman. And she says, I've got tits. I could dig a hole if I had to, which I thought, oh, brilliant. This is character.
Emma's good. I like Emma and Paul.
I like them a lot.
Collier, I could take or leave, but Emma and Paul are good.
Yes.
Yep. So Susan falling asleep on the train, the imagery of the girl running, and then also, again, this red-hued vision of her, seemingly her mom, yelling at her. Susan's pretty later. They're back at they're at the train station. Chris does tell Susan he'll never leave her. There's no goodbyes between us. And they slowly, calmly, you know, stick to the plan, tell the truth. They turn around the corner and meet a wall of police officers. And
it's pretty amazing.
Good morning. Or good evening.
Good evening. Because it's midnight. They board the 2358 and arrive an hour later, but at about the same time because of the time difference between France and England. And there's an extraordinary wall with the DCI in the middle and two kneeling armed police. Mounted police at the back. Yeah. Bright lights on them. And this nondescript couple, in fact, so nondescript that Paul, who's on the walkie-talkie looking out for him, they walk right past him and he doesn't see them. Emma, however, does spot them, interestingly.
Yeah, I thought that last scene of like seeing them too, like they just look so plain and you know, very British, you know, and just standing there and the flashing blue lights sort of bouncing off of them. I thought a good last image to end this first episode on. So that, and that's it. That's episode one of Landscapers. We're a quarter of the way done, Sarah.
I'm excited now because it means I can go on and watch episode
this
two.
This is the best part of doing this style, is that like we finish recording, it's like, I can watch another episode.
Yeah. The end credits are very much worth watching. Mm-hmm. As the end credits roll, we get what I believe, but again, I won't side goog until we've seen the whole thing, what I believe to be a mixture of reenactments and actual news footage of the breaking news of the discovery of the bodies, a helicopter shot of a tent in a backyard. I could as easily believe that that's new reenactment footage, or it could be footage from 2014. And then we go to a almost sepia tone, certainly a dull monochrome tone, shots of the apartment in France, the set of the apartment in France being taken down by the crew.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued. You know, it is a true story, but I think what's working for me is, you know, Susan and Christopher to some extent, although how much of this is him following her lead is her sort of being enamored with old Hollywood and that then playing into the stylistic choices that Will Sharpe is making as he's making the show. As we said, I think most are working for me. I think it's an interesting choice in Olivia Colman, David Thewlis. They're both they both are making great performances here. So I'm very excited, and I'm excited to see what's next.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I hope we see Tabitha again.
Yeah, perhaps. And there might, I don't know, it could be some court thing. So you could certainly see Tabitha being involved in that. Okay, that's it. We'll be back tomorrow in your podcast feeds to chat about episode 2. The episodes are not named, unfortunately. They're episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, and episode 4. So no hints as to what's going to come in tomorrow's episode, but we will be back in your podcast feeds. Sarah, what else do you have going on, and where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter if they so wish, at Sarah Carradine. And sort of various other places around and about, which are completely gone from my mind. But next time you hear me, I'll have a list.
Okay. You know what? They would have heard them yesterday too. So.
That's true. That's very true.
So, yeah.
Grace, what about you? Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. Lots of stuff happening over here on post show recaps, Yellow Jackets coverage. We'll have wrapped up by the time you're listening to this, but if it's not a show you've watched, I highly recommend it. And then you can listen to Josh, Jess, and I binge podcast almost daily about that show. That was very, very fun. I'm also covering Euphoria, the HBO show. So the episodes drop on Sundays, so we record on Mondays. That's Amon Adwin and I. And actually, you know, you might be hearing this in the HBO feed. So postshowrecaps.com/HBO or /HBO pod can get you the HBO feed, where we're covering a lot of HBO, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Succession, Insecure, Euphoria. So it's all in that feed for your pleasure. Also started a new project over on Rob as a podcast talking about sports. So a new weekly sports show where we talk about the biggest stories of the week and play some games along the way. I was very thrilled to be joined on the inaugural episode back in on January, I want to say 10th, by AJ Mass and Lavina. So check that out. And there should be a couple other podcasts in the Rob Has a Podcast Reality TV Wrap Ups feed. Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, bye.
Toodaloo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.